Okay, well, I'm Stephen Downs, and for the benefit of the people who are listening to us later on, I'm here in Edson, Alberta, doing a session on blogs and wikis and open source and content management and you name it. I've got a pretty loose agenda for the day. I have some things that I sort of have in mind to cover, and it's going to depend a lot on where you guys are all at right now and where you want to go with that. So I'm going to be guided to a large degree by your comments and questions, which means that I want to begin by encouraging your comments and questions. For those of you who don't know me, and it's kind of neat to see that some people do know me, I work with the National Research Council. I'm affiliated with the Institute for Information Technology. It's a job I still don't know how I got, but I got it. And I'm based in Moncton, New Brunswick, where today it's raining, which is very strange. And my work, I'm called a researcher, and I actually do that sometimes, but my work basically involves doing some development work, some writing of software, writing of papers. Some of you have seen my website, so you've seen the articles. I do talks like this. And basically what my focus is the use of internet technologies, and especially web technologies, although not exclusively, in learning, in education. And my perception of this is that a lot, when you use internet technologies, because of the connectivity that you get, because of the sharing, and to a large degree because of the openness, the open access to resources, a lot of things change in learning. So I come at this from two directions. I come at it, on one hand, from a tech direction, and I've got 2 feet in the tech camp, but I also come at it from a more philosophical or more pedagogical direction as well, trying to understand what learning becomes when we have the access to the entire world to learn from. Excuse me. What I expect to cover today, and again, you know, this is all pretty wide open, but what I expect to cover today is can be classed loosely under the heading of Web 2.0. And let me just see right now. How many of you have heard of Web 2.0? All right, yeah. So, and already I see a rolling of the eyes. That's okay. And so the topics broken down will be blogs and blogging, content management systems, RSS and other content syndication formats, wikis, collaborative tagging, or collaborative bookmarking, as it's sometimes called, feed aggregation, remixing, repurposing, podcasting, and other stuff. I think it's a wide range of things, and you know, I could just sort of go one thing to the next, or I could sort of dive deeper into one thing. That's going to depend a lot on what you guys want to do as we go through this. Now, I want to begin by finding out where you all are. I know where you are, but you know what I mean. So I'll ask first of all, how many of you have a blog? Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, how many? That's fine. But and where I want to begin, I didn't plan to have handouts or anything like that, and the handout just sort of arrived in my mailbox on Sunday. I thought, ooh, okay, that's good. But where I want to begin is to make sure that everybody has a blog, and we'll take it from there. How many of you are familiar with blogging? Pretty well, everyone. How many of you have been to the Blogger website? Okay, yeah. All right. So that's where I want to start, because a lot of the content that we can have for this session, especially later on as we go, is stuff that you can produce as we go through the session. So what I would like people to do, or actually let me stop before I do that. I love the sound effects. let me just check and make sure. How does that sound to all of you so far? Cool? You can say no, I'll talk about economics or, you know. I have no problem with that. Medieval German philosophy, good at that. All right. Nah, I'm just kidding.
Actually, if I can just interrupt here, I'm not sure whether everyone is aware we are going to be doing a bridge session here as well. Has the remote sites been connected to our bridge session?
I can't tell. There's someone.
Will Pax is here. All right. How about Black Gold? Are you?
I think we can deal with that. I haven't set one up before, but I think I know what to do. So you just have to give me the information to join. Or
okay. If you go to the Bridget icon on your desktop.
Well, first of all, I've got to start everything up. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Where we're doing this.
Yeah.
I just need your address, really.
It's bridget.gyrd.ad.ca is the name of the server.
Okay.
Anyhow, for the rest of you, while you're doing that, where I'd like to begin then is to have people go to Blogger. It's just www.blogger.com. And I'll just pop it up on the screen here. And I'm starting here because this is pretty well the entry point for most people when they get into blogging and RSS and all of that. It's a free service. Used to be an independent company, but it was purchased by Google, so now it's a Google service. And it's very easy to use. And so what I'd like you all to do is to actually create a blog. And so basically the three steps here, create an account, name your blog, choose a template. But basically just hit the big orange arrow. Google's so good at usability. And just use disposable usernames and passwords. Anything you want, basically. And this is the fun part, because I get to see what you named your blogs. I might as well. And now it's playing the game. And then once you've done that, hit the next big orange arrow. Now, I'm not going to actually create one here on this screen because I've got one that I already used, so Blogger will complain to me. That's probably going to be that. Thank you. logging into my own Blogger account here. You can see on the screen I have many blogs, some of which are even useful. Let's see what your screens are looking like there. You have to sort of be careful when you do these things because, you know, they change the interface from time to time.
What do we put for the blog address?
And for the blog address, basically you're picking a single word. Now remember there are about 10 million or so blogs on Blogger, so you'll have to pick something that's unique, but it's just any old word will do. And if it's not unique, it'll tell you.
Yes.
This sort of you have to think about when you're designing software. If people feel in the same form twice,
they're
really upset at you.
I guess we made digital cameras to take the funky pictures of this.
That's pretty surprising.
I should have written
it. I just put a red. Did my blog address, I put a word in Maui.
Oh, yeah.
It is gone.
Really?
Yeah. How are we going over here?
Yeah,
I've been created. That looks successful.
Create a new PC, you get a blog title. What are we going to see when you arrive?
There's always somebody telnetting on the side. How are we doing out there in the remote sites? Have you got your blogs created yet?
Running into a little difficulty.
And all you see is my belly. Jeez. Isn't that attractive? What did you encounter? What difficulty?
An acceptable username.
Oh, okay.
What did you say?
Yes, we won't ask you what you tried to use. And I'm sure Blogger has a whole set of routines that it runs through to scan for bad usernames and various permutations of them.
Peter, out in Black Hole, have you been able to create or connect to our Bridget session?
Sorry, Gord, what was the address again?
Okay. BRIDGIT.
Okay, John, GYRD.AD.CA?
Yes, that's correct. And once it connects to the server, you should see a conference. There's probably about three conferences running right now. One of them is Leila Stephen Downs workshop. Just click on that one, highlight that one, and then click the join button.
Anyone got a blog created here yet?
Yeah.
Okay, what's the name of it?
Kurt Scope, KURTSCOB. I'm posting it yet, but I'm
not. That's okay. Well, I wonder. Oh, it might not show up yet. We'll see. Spell that again, please.
KURTSCOB.
The neat thing about Blogger blogs is the URLs are very similar. You have the blog name like that, and then it's always blogspot.com. And let's see if it's showing up yet. Nope, not yet. I guess you got to post some. So
try James. This is done.
Okay, you
break.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do we use for a blog address? How about? Well, I can't use your last name, but
Bill Slicer.
Bill
the slicers.
You can hug slicers.
And there's knowing the users out there. I bet you that one's.
That's what Cheech Magoo. I don't know.
Yeah, Cheech Magoo.
Yeah. Oops. Like, once you've created your blog, you'll be in a page that looks similar to this. And if you create a new post, and I think it just actually punts you straight into this window. You'll get your screen that looks like this with the text area. And you just type in a title for your post. And then type in your content. And that's basically it. You have your WYSIWYG controls here, and they all work pretty much as expected. One of the things that Blogger has recently introduced is the capacity to add an image to your blog post. So if you have images on your computer, just click the link, browse around for the image. I have no idea what images are on here, and I can't even read the file names. There's a bunch of DLLs. That's probably not going to make very good images, is it? So, I see where Firefox is. I won't add an image. I can't find one. So anyhow, so once you've finished your typing in your content, simply click Publish Post, and what this will do is it'll save your post and it will update your blog, and then you can view your blog in a separate window just by clicking on View Blog. And there it is. Yeah, well, I've had practice. this is Yukon Mania blog has an interesting and sometimes troubled history, which I'll talk about a bit. I actually created it for a session I did up in Whitehorse. Pretty similar session to this one. And once I had created it, I just started using it as a test blog for various bits and pieces, which is why you see some very odd looking posts there. This is something I did here. It's kind of a silly thing, but I wrote a script that grabbed the output from a mailing list and used that to upload content to this blog. So I decided I would capture all of Jensen's posts and put them on a blog because I could. So, but okay, who else has a blog up now?
Ina Britt, A-K-I-N-A.
A-K-I-N-A?
Yeah. B-R-I-T.
And let's see your work of art. Oops, too many periods. I'm basically typing blind here. My eyes just aren't good enough to see that screen. Oh, isn't that a nice, joyful, nice, joyful blog?
I look at something where you were.
So that's why I put this point.
I look at something for a picture.
Okay, go back to where you're entering content. Oh, that's not it. Oh, uh-oh. You got it there? Okay, cool. I may end up moving this because I really can't see that screen. It's hard. So I'm not going to do it right now, but when we take the break, I'm going to shift because I'm working blind here. Yes, your eyes are important. Okay, and this is the one that was. Let's see if this one's going yet. Look at that. Welcome to my world. This is, I can't read it again.
This is Kurt Scob.
Right, Kurt Scob. Blogspot. See, and the thing is, and I really want to emphasize this. You get somebody who, you know, like in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, they've created something like that. And, you know, it might be a student, might be a person out there. But the thing is, you know, that looks pretty good. That's not the image I would have chosen. But, Basically, yeah, you hooked up the live cam to the blog. what you've got there is a nice looking website with, a nice formatting, image, text. You can toss a link. You haven't tossed a link into your blog there, but you could very easily. So if we come back here, I'll edit this post again, right? If I just want to add a link. Oops. All right.
So that's when you create the second one. You just put it underneath the first one. Does it make links, and then you go each one?
The second post?
Yeah.
Okay. Hang on a second. I just want to show you how to do a link here. I've just typed in some text. I'll highlight this. And this is that. Yep. Click on that button. And then just type the URL. Easy as can be. And now we have an active link. I'll publish this. And it's just a few seconds, and I'll view the blog. There's my link, and it works. I love saying it works before the site actually pops up.
Actually, if I could interrupt again here, Stephen, I think the folks at Black Gold have joined our bridging session now.
Excellent.
I think if we could back up again just to sort of
Get
them up to this point, I think they'd appreciate it.
All right, where we started off, those of you in Black Gold, we went to blogger.com. Oops, oh, now I'm logged in, of course. Let me log myself out here. There we go. Went to blogger.com. That's the screen that we saw when we went there. We clicked on the big orange arrow. And this was the page where you created your blog. You're choosing a username, and it needs to be something unique. And you're competing against, 10, 15 million other people's usernames. So, although it's surprising how many choices are still available. And then enter your password, your email address, of course. And then in the next screen, which I can't show you here, you actually choose your blog name. The blog name will be the first part of the URL for your blog. So I chose for one of my blogs, Yukon Mania. So the address of my blog is yukonmania.blogspot.com. Now once you've done that, you'll end up in a screen. So I'm just going to sign in now so you can see it. Now you're going to end up in a screen that looks somewhat like this, with the place to put the new posts and all of that, and the title for your post, and then the text for your post. So you type in your text, and then you just click on Publish Post, and that will create your blog. And so people have been creating blogs left, right, and center. And, oops, that's not one of them. But there's the Yukon Mania blog that I created, and here's the link that I just created on it. And here's a blog that is now about 10 minutes old. And here's another blog that's just been created. The images that you can use on your blogs are JPEGs, GIFs, and PNGs. If you haven't animated, it'll come up just fine. I always pronounce it GIFs, and I know that that's wrong, but that's how I learned it.
Isn't
there
something you can't do? That creamy stuff?
I'm too old to pronounce or change the way I pronounce an image format.
We don't want to tell you cat's fingers.
So. Now, if you want to create a second post, the way to do it is basically. Whoops, that's not. I got to get rid of some of these screens here, but not that one. Basically, anytime you want to create a post, you basically go to blogger.com. And it may take you straight into your blog, or if you have more than one blog, it may take you to the list of blogs. You just select the list, or select the blog from the list, and you'll see this display here. It's the listing of your posts. You can always go back and edit any of your previous posts. And for those of you who make mistakes, you can always delete your post. But to create the new post, you just click on that Create a New Post button, and you're back into that editing screen. Another thing, there's also various options up here. Obviously, you can start your blog. Blogger is pretty neat because you go right into the template of your blog. You remember you selected a pre-designed template, but then you can go straight to the code of that template and start messing around with it. So this is the actual CSS that's used. So if I wanted to change something, say the blog header, and what will I do with the blog header? I don't know. I'll make it purple. Oh, sure.
Is this right now?
That's, yeah. They even now.
Is it websites?
Is it blocked in your... Yeah.
And lots of other ones are too. MySpace.com, other ones that are...
Pixel.
I don't
lie. Yeah, because it can get out of hand.
Email flies.
Yeah.
I've got enough trouble with email.
Yeah, the blogging software is in many places blocked. I'm not sure that you have or even can block all instances of it. And certainly, you know, when your students are at home, it's not blocked. You know, or if they're at a web cafe or at their friends or wherever. So they certainly have access to this outside of school. A lot of these sites, too, if they have the cell phones that pick up the internet web access, I'm not sure how distributed it is here in Alberta, but I mean, if your school network is blocked, they can just call it up on their phone and surf from their phone. So I actually had to recommend that to people in a government office where all of the good stuff was blocked. Pull out your phones and do it that way. So, you know, I mean, the filtering is more like a speed bump than actual blockage.
Steven, can you add an attachment to your blog? Like, if you post, can I have an Excel file? Can I attach it to it?
Oh, that's a darn good question. I've actually never tried to do that, but let's take a look.
I didn't find anywhere when I was looking.
Yeah.
That's great.
I don't think so. I don't think so with Blogger. There are various other systems out there that I know will allow you to do that. But I think Blogger, the only thing that you can upload is the image. What I've always done typically is I simply use FTP to upload it to my own website. So
right, so you link to theirs.
And then I just link to it. But, you know, most people aren't going to have their own web server kicking around. It always asks me if I'm sure I want to navigate away from that empty window. Some settings for your blog. I got to this page just by settings. I can change the title anytime I want. I really thought it was a bad title, but I like Yukon Mania, so I'm going to leave it. I can give it a description. And as your blog to our listings, you want to, unless you're blogging privately for some reason, you want to have stuff like this set to yes. things, because one of the things that people have discovered about blogging that's very attractive is that people read the blogs. And I know that sounds like kind of an odd statement, but you know, I remember with the people at St. Joseph in Quebec City, and they set up a bunch of blogs for their grade 5 students. And you know, it's a controlled environment. They're blogging on their school system. They had blogging software installed on their own servers, so you know they're not rampaging all over the place. But they created their posts and posted up their messages. One of the things that they posted was a review of a circus that they had seen. They went down to see the circus. And, you know, just another post. Can you imagine a grade 5 posting about a circus? And what happened was one of the members of the circus, a few days later from some other city, found the posting on the circus and replied to it. And so now you have this grade 5 student with the experience of communicating with a member of the circus that he had just seen. And it was a very powerful experience, because you know, it's not the sort of thing you can do. It made that person, in a sense, part of the show, part of you know the interaction that happens. It made the circus more personal to that person, and also for the person in the circus to talk to somebody who attended the circus. It was they liked that as well. Pardon? Well, that's a good question. I didn't ask that. Because everything can be faked, right? I could be an imposter, even now. Like, how do you know this is really me? And, you know, my view is, and I think a lot of people concur with this view, is as these technologies are used more and more in classrooms and that, You need to talk to people about how to evaluate what they're reading, how to ask skeptical questions. I wrote a paper not too long ago. And this should pop it up. So, sorry. Oh, I can't find it now. Anyway. Oh, that's fine. You'll notice I don't remember any of my own URLs. I just Google my own site. There's principles for evaluating websites. And you can sort of see the link there. Now, all of you have blogs. And if you want to come back to this paper now, what you should do is take a note of this site. So we'll just copy the link. Very simple. And we'll pop back into our blog, wherever it is here. Here we go. I'm just going to, posting. And I'll create a new post, principles. I'll type my text. And highlight it just like before. Control V to paste it in there and publish my post. And the thing is, this took a little bit of doing here because I'm sort of explaining it and showing it, but it becomes a second nature sort of thing for people. As they're looking through the website or as they're doing anything, to just quickly snag something, a reference, a comment, whatever, and pop it into the blogs. There's a whole school out there of what might be called conference blogs or conference blogging, and what people do is they blog while they're attending their conference. And for somebody who's into blogging, it sounds sort of bad, but never mind. It becomes sort of second nature where they see something interesting, they blog it. And a lot of the times, the blog is written in the first instance for the person who's creating the blog. And this is one of the major uses for something like this in schools, is they can blog the things that they're learning about as the day goes on. You pick something up in class, blog it. You know, get a reference like this paper that I just referred you to, blog it, because then it's there. And what happens is, if now that it's blogged, give Google about 10 minutes, and then you can search for it. And so none of your notes are ever lost. And you've probably seen me navigating my own site via Google. And that's deliberate, because it's easier, it's faster. I have full access to everything I've written very simply, because I've just simply blogged it, posted it on my site, and now I can access it through Google. I don't use Blogger so much. I do a little bit, because I've got various experiments and that on the go. But it doesn't matter. You can use Blogger, or you can use any of a number of other blogging software tools, and you still get the same effect. So has everyone got a blog so far?
Maybe we could check with the folks out at Black Gold and at Wolf Creek here. How are things going out your area?
We're up and running here. Sorry for the little technical difficulties we have, but we're connected to the Bridget's office and things. And we've all created a blog, but it's not quite with you.
Okay, great. Thank you. How about out at Wolf Creek?
Here at Wolf Creek, all of us have our blogs up and running now.
Okay, great.
All right.
We do seem to be losing the Bridget connection fairly frequently, though.
Any suggestions as to why? John?
No, we'll check.
Okay, John will check and see.
Thanks, sir.
Okay, well, why don't we take a couple minutes now? I'm going to take a quick break.
Okay.
Pause for the cause and all of that. And create, now, if you guys don't want to take a break, that's cool. Create a couple more posts. We're going to use these posts. This isn't just busy work. So I want to get a base of content out there. And then we'll take a quick break, and then I'll come back and talk a little bit about SS and blog aggregation, and this is where this stuff really takes off. Right now, what you've got is a dead simple content management system, but when you bring everything together, that's when things get really interesting. So I'm going to put the old sound recorder on pause here. Okay, so we're starting again. I just want to briefly point to a couple of other blogging services. I just need to find the Firefox icon here on the computer. Does anyone see it?
Up a little bit. No.
Oh yeah, okay, there we go. You know, I was kidding when I said I'm working blind here. Yeah, but then I need to move my whole microphone set up, so I'm just going to wing it, if it's okay. It's good practice for me when my eyes inevitably fail. So, based on demographics, if your students have blogs already, and based on demographics, many of them will. We'll check that in a bit. They probably don't have Blogger accounts. They probably have an account at this site, Live Journal.
Can I ask the remote sites to please mute their microphones, please? No, it isn't.
There's a Live Journal. It's a very popular site. Look at these stats here. Total users, what's that? 9 million? Or 92 million? I can't tell. Active is less than that. It's only about 2 million. You know, they're getting like, you know, 15,000 posts per hour, 263 posts per minute. That's just this one site. And LiveJournal is very similar to Blogger in many ways. I wonder if I remember my login for this. I'm not going to have you create accounts here. I think it's a bit different here, so I might not be able to remember it. Just as an aside, I really hate all this logging in. And this is something that is going to change, and it's one of these things I wasn't sure would be changed by the time this session came out or not, but it's definitely going to change. And no, it didn't like me. I can't remember my LiveJournal user ID, but it doesn't matter. What's different about LiveJournal, I'm just going to pop in here into a random LiveJournal blog. Does anyone see the random link up there? There should be a link up there that says random blog or random or something like that. Sorry. There used to be one.
Yeah, if you get you want to search, and then it pops up underneath on the left. No, the other
side
of
the screen. Next to welcome, on the top left-hand corner. Top left-hand corner. Wait. Yeah, search. Okay, that's why I couldn't find it. And random. I don't know what we're... Thank you. I don't know what we're going to see here. Okay, and here we go. We've got... Oh, I can't read it. So, yeah, the hype. One of the things that this is the neat thing about my job is I just go and I look at these things and I get to call it research. And you know, you wouldn't believe the world out there. You start hitting random LiveJournal entries. So this is Jolly Laid, I guess. Really, I think I really have to work on eating it. What you will find, and I guarantee you, especially if you start punting, like LiveJournal, the posts on LiveJournal, the blogs on LiveJournal, tend to be much more personal than the blogs on Blogger or other blogging services. And I don't know exactly how that came to be. I know that the demographics of LiveJournal are very different. The users tend to be younger, and they tend to be female. And the big difference between a site like LiveJournal and a site like Blogger is that in LiveJournal, you can specifically create friends. And I'm sort of searching through various LiveJournal blogs here, trying to see if I can find it. There we go. The link to the person's friends. And what people do is they create connections with each other. They link to each other, and of course they comment on each other's posts, and they create these networks of friends. And it's kind of interesting. You know, you go to one of the friends sites, and then you follow this web of friends, and these little community that is formed. And you know, a lot of the times they're just... You know, people all from the same school or all from the same class, and other times they're people that are scattered around the world and just have a common interest. And they share a lot with each other. What LiveJournal allows you to do is to block comments on your blog to only your friends, and it even allows you to block access to your blog itself only to your friends. So there's an awful lot of LiveJournal that lies below the surface. And what we're seeing is what they're willing to say publicly. And as you go through these, and this is very much worth noting, they're willing to say an awful lot publicly. It's just unbelievable what they say and what they talk about. Well, I talked to Seth last night when he was offered the job if he wanted it. Okay. Yeah, so sometimes the grammar is a little off, too. Let's find another one. Oops, one more. someone was asking before the break, you know, do the students change these templates themselves? These are all, they've gone in, they've edited the code, they've added their custom graphics, they've completely messed around with the templates, and they do everything. And the reason why this works is because it's safe, in the sense that you can't really break it. Sure, you can go in to your Blogger template or whatever and write bad code and your page simply won't display or anything like that, but then you just go back, select one of the predefined templates, and everything's okay again. And then you start experimenting again. And that's what they do. And that's, to a large degree, how they learn how to do a lot of this stuff. And some of the stuff that they do with their templates and their formatting is really quite amazing. So, and sometimes it's quite boring. But another blogging site, and this one might not be blocked on your schools, because maybe it is, I don't know, because it doesn't have, it's not one of the mainstream blogs. This is TypePad. It's third, fourth, fifth blogging site. It's owned by Six Apart, which is the, are they? Yeah, they're the ones that also own LiveJournal. And they also have some blogging software that they sell called Movable Type. TypePad, same thing. Create your account. TypePad is more commercial. You have to pay. If you want things that, you know, if you want good blogs, good access and all of that. Consequently, the demographics are, they're older. People who are professionals or TypePad users tend to be people who are professionals. If they're going to have a blog for their company or a work blog, something like that, a lot of people use TypePad for that. I can't believe that I actually produced a result. This is a service hosted by James Farmer. He's based in Australia. EduBlogs.org, and as you can see from the heading, free blogs for educational professionals or education professionals. And I don't know how many was that, 3475 weblogs? He only started it a few months ago, and that was probably just about the same time that you guys were booking me is when he started this. And you know, I remember he was so enthused. He had 100 weblogs, and now he's at 3745 or 3475. What's interesting about EduBlogs is that this site is run using a piece of blogging software called WordPress. And I'm going to zip to the WordPress site now. I'm going to have to find it. You see why I use Firefox, though? I just love that little thing up in the corner. That's my direct access to Google. I couldn't live without it. And so I never have to type Google's address. I have a Google search right in Firefox right there.
I like those tabs you can have in the same window where you just click on the top and
versus
getting started on the latest headlines, you can put all your links across there and you get to edit instead of having Microsoft links.
Well, yeah. This is kind of neat too, because you can search all those things. I generally just search Google, although I've on my own computer, I added one of these searches for my own site, so, which is kind of neat. It took a little bit of doing, but it's nothing major. WordPress is free and open source software. It's written in a language called PHP. It uses a database backend. Typically, again, free and open source database software called MySQL. The setup's a bit, a pain, But once it's set up, I think it's very easy to use. WordPress, and what James Farmer has done, he set up the WordPress with multiple accounts. And this is something that's being done in various schools. They're doing a WordPress installation for their own school with multiple accounts, and you set up privacy features in that. So Seb Pett, who worked with NRC last year, not with us anymore. He's where is he? He's with Ross Mayfield. Is that Seb Pett? That might be. He did a project at a school division in New Brunswick where they did this. They set up the WordPress blogs on the school server with the database backend, and basically created their own private blogging network in the school. WordPress can be installed anywhere. I have an installation of WordPress on my own website. I don't know if I can get into it, but maybe not. I had a WordPress installation on my website. I put these things up and take them down. To install WordPress on my website took me about 10 minutes. Because all you do to install it is you download the source code, which is PHP. You put the source code on your web server. You tell it where to find your database, and you're done. And there's no major installation process. You don't have to configure a whole bunch of stuff. And for those of you who like blogs in your school divisions, there are installations of WordPress all over the internet. Hundreds, thousands. So if you're blocking Blogger, that's one thing, but you can't block WordPress. It would be very difficult to block WordPress, because how do you figure out what to block? And there are sites out there on the internet now that are in WordPress. You wouldn't know. You can't tell. You know, like this site right here. I know it's the WordPress site, but is it in WordPress? Did they use WordPress to create this site? How could you tell? You can also step it up a notch. This is Drupal. And Drupal is less blogging software and more content management software. It's also written in PHP, which means the installation of Drupal is again about 10 minutes. And maybe 15 minutes, because it's pretty complicated software. And Drupal allows you to have on the one site multiple user accounts, and everybody basically posts on the same site. And this homepage in Drupal, this is in Drupal. It's not surprising that they use their own software. And I have, I cleaned my website a while back, but I forgot the things that I cleaned. That's probably not a good thing to do. But here we'll take a look at some screenshots. Oh, that was supposed to blow up big for me. There we go. The way Drupal is set up, you have your posts and all of that, but the website itself is organized as a series of boxes, so you can have specialized box content, announcements, things like this. A lot of institutions and organizations, including schools, use software like Drupal to have their school website, to create their school website. It's got a lot of similarities. This is also on Drupal. You'd never know, would you? This is a site called Our Media, and I have a personal attachment to Our Media because I worked with the Drupal in the background. That CSS design and all of that is mine. And that took longer. Our media is an interesting site because it allows anybody to upload any multimedia content that they want for free. And our media acts as an interface to another service called Internet Archives. It's run by a guy called Brewster Cowley. And basically what he's trying to do is collect everything. So any multimedia that you create, you can upload here and you'll have it stored permanently for free.
What kind of limitations on size, quantity?
None.
None. Unlimited.
It's unlimited. Think about that. It's unlimited. And you can either use the on-site loader, and they also have a script written in Python that you can download to your desktop to make it easier to upload a lot of stuff. Now you might ask, how could this possibly work? But what Brewster Cowley is doing now, he's got this huge access to this huge, like terabytes, petabytes or petabytes. Of multimedia content. And the thing is, when you upload this content, you typically need to put in some metadata. Minimally, it needs a title and an author, right? And people usually write a description or something like that. So we've got this tagged multimedia uploaded onto this site. And it's just, for Brewster Cowley, it's this wealth of information that now he can mine and use for various purposes. And what the uploaders get out of this is uploading. They can upload all of their stuff for free.
So Stephen, then presumably they're giving him full copyright clearance to use it however he chooses.
That's a good point, and not necessarily. Most people, when they upload contents, and if I could, my login should still work here. Maybe not. There we go. So this is my page. That's not me. publish my media. So suppose I was uploading some audio. Oops, access denied. Yeah, isn't that interesting? Why? What's it saying there?
Oh, you forgot your password.
Yeah,
first page.
Oh, okay. Didn't like my password. Well, that's why he's denying me access. Okay. Never mind. Anyhow, when you upload, you get to choose the rights associated with your media. Most people upload using a license from an organization called Creative Commons. How many of you have heard of Creative Commons? Wow. Oh, good. Lawrence Lessing's going to be so proud of me. Creative Commons is an instantiation of the concept of what is sometimes called copyleft, as opposed to copyright. And the tagline for Creative Commons is, some rights reserved. And what you do when you publish material or post material online under a Creative Commons license is you allow other people to use your material without getting permission, subject to some simple conditions. And then basically there are three types of conditions you can choose. You can choose to require attribution, and that's a very popular, and in fact, my material, which is licensed under Creative Commons, I have the attribution condition turned on. If somebody uses my stuff, I'd like to be attributed, because I'm very vain. You can also specify non-commercial use only. And in fact, I also have a condition on my website. And then you can also require that if they take your material and create something with it, that whatever they create has to be shared under the same license. And that's called share alike. And that's the principle underlying open source, new public licensing, or GPL as it's called. Now, was that a comment there from
Wolf Creek?
Sure.
I'm just wondering, like, this Creative Commons, is it actually put digital signatures onto your media to enforce that type of licensing, or is it just a piece of paper, just like open source license, where it's assumed that you have used this, but how does somebody know that this JPEG that you uploaded is using this Creative Commons license? When is there some kind of way of tagging that?
Well, I mean, you can always tag a JPEG. But typically that doesn't happen. Creative Commons falls under the category of what would be called rights expression. And the principle here is that if you express the rights associated with the media, that's enough. And you don't need to force it. And by and large it has worked. By and large, people respect the conditions of Creative Commons licenses. And in fact, Creative Commons has been around for 2 or 3 years now, and there has not been, to my knowledge, an incident of widespread abuse of Creative Commons licensed content. And to a large degree, it's because the licensing conditions are so simple. You know, it means nothing to add an attribution to something, for example. And because It's you know, you don't go down that road of signing pieces of paper and written agreements and decryption and all of that, so it becomes very simple to use. On a web page, typically, and I'm going to pop into my own page here so I can show you this. What you'll see on a web page or on a page associated with an image is this green Creative Commons tag. And if you click on that, that'll take you specifically to the license associated with the media. And as you can see, as I mentioned, attribute, non-commercial, share alike. That's the conditions under which my material is licensed. And I have found my own experience, and I've got a lot of stuff up there that people like to use, is simply declaring that has worked. And as you'll see in a little bit, I would find very quickly, very easily, if somebody was using my content in a way that violated this agreement. I haven't. I've got all kinds of stuff up there. People have not violated my copyright. Go figure. Also, what I'm doing now is I'm opening up the source code for my webpage. And all right, maybe it wasn't the best idea. Here we go. Here's where the image is on my website, the one that I just clicked on, and here's the link to the Creative Commons site that I just went to. And what this is metadata associated with the license. And so, you know, it requires such and such, permits such and such. This is a rights expression, a declaration of the rights associated with my resource here. And most sites that use Creative Commons will express their rights using this metadata. This is written in XML, and specifically it's written in RDF. And the reason why it's done that way is because it is now, because it's in a constant format, it's machine readable. And in fact, somebody reading my website never even sees this bit. But Yahoo sees it, and Google sees it. And if we go to Yahoo, now, again, I'm going to have to try to find it. There is a Creative Commons specific search on Yahoo, and I can't read it to find it. So if anyone sees it there, let's
go to go at the end of the tag, go to advanced,
yeah,
and then it's
the fifth one down, the fourth one right there at the bottom. Down fifth. Bottom left.
There we go. See, click this button. Find stuff I can use commercially if I want. Find stuff I can use for whatever. Now I'll do my search. What will I search for? Cars? Good enough. Fast cars. Yeah. Cars. So here's contents I can put on my website. There's the Creative Commons license.
Can you go to the image tab first, then advance, and then do the same thing and find Creative Commons images?
Should be able to, yeah. Let's go back here, images. Right, advanced. Cars. I might have to mess around with this to make this work perfectly, but that's okay. And I don't see it there.
No.
That's too bad.
Maybe Google.
Yeah, Google also has a Creative Commons specific search. And again, I don't know if it's going to work with images or not.
I don't see it in their advanced images. There's an advanced search.
Yeah, usage rights. There we go. See, there. Here's the. I'm not gonna mess around with this a whole lot because it's kind of boring to watch. But
if you go, you can.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, here we go. File format. Da, 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 da. I don't see any images up. Nah, that's being very annoying. That's okay, we can get Creative Commons slideshows. And we'll look for fast cars. And let's see what we get. Here's a Creative Commons slideshow. I'll pop it open.
Yeah, Creative Commons search using Google, the URL is creativecommons.org/find.
That figures. There we go. Oh, beautiful. Thank you. creativecommons.org/find. Everybody should be putting that into their blogs now. All right. Oh, yeah. Okay. They've got both Google and Yahoo here. Isn't that nice? Audio, images. And, of course, you can just browse. Here's a bunch of Creative Commons images. How many is that? 869,000 under this license. Another 250,000 under this license. What's that? 2.5 million under this license. That's the attribution non-commercial. And so on. There are millions of images on this one website that you can use for whatever. Here's one of them. Isn't that nice? It's not one of mine, is it? No. Oh, it wouldn't be. You might wonder where I am right here. I'm not here by accident. This is a site called Flickr. Why am I typing that? The URL is Flickr, FLICKR.com. Think of it as blogging for photographs. Flickr was just bought by Yahoo. That is an event that took place since this. So, am I spelling my name right there? Now. So here's my Flickr account, and what Flickr does is it allows me to upload photos. very simply to upload photos. Here's a photo from Amsterdam that I uploaded. And, that's under all rights reserved. That's not right. I think I'll change that. Add a license to your photos. Attribution, non-commercial. That's all I want. Where is it? Attribution, non-commercial, share alike. That's the one I used. Save license. I have now licensed my photograph for people anywhere around the world to use for their classroom websites, their personal blog, whatever. Now again, the upload process is quite simple. I can't do it from here because I don't know whether there are any images on this particular computer. But as you can see, I can just simply upload, just browse, it's multi-upload. What Flickr does, and Flickr again is a free service to a certain point, and they don't restrict you by file space, they restrict you by upload capacity per month. So, and I think it's what, three, yeah, here we go, a limit of 20 megabytes of uploads per month, which for me is about 20 photos, which is plenty. And then you can buy more upload capacity if you take out a Flickr account. Flickr also is kind of neat because, like LiveJournal, it allows you to create a network of friends. Here are photos from my friends. Probably should have reviewed these. Okay, let's go back home. I don't have many friends, but I can list them. If I can find them, then pop into my account. Oh, no. People, maybe that's it. Here we go. Here are my friends. And it's actually very easy to find friends. Let's pick someone I know who almost certainly has an account. Maybe not. Let's try that. No, that's good to change it. Silly thing. There we go. And I can make this person my friend just by clicking on. There we go.
So they don't get any choice whether to be a friend or not.
Now, they will actually get an email message saying so-and-so wants to be your friend. I picked someone who would say yes. but the thing is, right, this person can be on my friend, can be one of my friends, but they might not think of me as one of their friends, so I don't show up on their site. But they would show up on my site. And so here we go. And it's neat because now you have this pool of people that you know, and you're sharing your photos back and forth with each other. So you might wonder what Flickr's big business model is. Here it is. Printing. Well, if you're in the U.S. let's say no and see what happens. Well, that's where you are. They couldn't figure that out. Okay, you told it. Well, I know that. Yeah, see, that's one of the things about Flickr. A lot of these services, they offer service in the U.S. only. It's very annoying because you have to fake a U.S. address. And that's why there's all kinds of stuff that goes to area code 90210. So, If I wanted to use the Flickr printing service, I'd just contact somebody I know who lives in the States and say, you know, you order this for me. And it's the internet, so I know people in the States, so it's not a problem. It's just annoying.
Steven. Mm-hmm. So the stuff that is on here, like on under Flickr, when you cruise around, you get like 73 photos in a slideshow and whatever else.
Yep.
These are basically photos that are allowed to be shared and taken and downloaded and used in other places, correct?
Well, on Flickr, again, people can choose their own license.
Okay.
So on Flickr, you can search for photos that are specifically Creative Commons. But you can also post photos. Well, the one that I just showed you there had all rights reserved. And so it's displayed, but it's not for you to download it and put it on your own website. But, and so you have proprietary material in the same environment as the open source material, the shared material. And by and large, what we've seen that so far is that works. By and large. So these photos, the other photos here, here's one that's probably still under all rights reserved.
How do you know, sorry, because that's what I must have been cruising when you said how you figure out whether it's reserved or not.
Okay. Whoops. Oh, I didn't mean to do that.
I was looking at one of the Columbia Cook of Africa and whatever. How do I know if it's reserved?
Just look on the right of the photograph is the additional information. And here, the little copyright tag, all rights reserved. And if you're looking at someone else's photograph, here's someone else's photograph right here.
NFSA? Like, if I look through mine.
If it, the rule regarding copyright is this: if it doesn't say, all rights are reserved.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the copyright kicks in by default. Personally, I think that's wrong, but what do you get it in? So this is pretty neat, because what you can do, and what people had to do before, is upload your photograph on Flickr, copy the image location, go to your blogging account, your blogger account, and put the image tag in, and that's how people were putting photographs on their blogs before Blogger allowed you to upload photos. So is Flickr blocked on your school sites?
Don't know.
Yeah.
It's not blocked here.
And there are other image uploading sites. This is the most popular and the most widely used, but it's certainly not the only one. And again, with especially with some of the new software that's coming, setting up sites like this becoming very simple. There's a development framework out there called Ruby on Rails. And when that works, it doesn't always work, but when that works, it allows you to set up a data-driven website like this very simply and very automatically. And so these kind of sites are popping up all over the place.
Flickr is considered personal network storage and data.
Which proxy?
It is. So it is blocked, eh?
HOSC.
What is an MLM site built with different, like, no, HTML, but can't build with
similar
stuff, like the size of the town and stuff, like open source stuff. Yeah.
Say that again?
Where was that we were looking at those sites that were... Is that they're written in a different language?
Oh, right. Like Drupal
and stuff.
Yeah.
But if you read the source, it still comes up as HTML.
Oh, yeah. On the web page, all of these things come up as plain HTML.
Okay.
And JavaScript. Okay. A lot of JavaScript.
So that's our media. Ourmedia.org stolen from front page, right? And that's design mode. And then I preview. So it looks like that in design mode. And then you preview it, and it goes back to, like, it understands what it looks like from normal.
Yeah.
It's quite
so that's Internet Explorer doing that.
That's just the separation between presentation and content, right? It's basically you turn off the style sheets, and that's what you get. So, yeah, I did that. One of the neat things about Firefox too is Firefox extensions, and what the extensions do is add capacities to your browser. And one of the extensions that I use at home extensively is called the Web Developers Extension. And it'll do things for me, like highlight all the different style elements, all the different boxes that I use in the design of my web page, so I can see where my boxes are. It'll also allow me to edit my CSS dynamically. It's a very useful tool. If you explore Firefox extensions, you find hundreds of extensions that do just about everything. One extension I had a lot of fun with was something called Wikalong. And what that allowed you to do is any web page, it opened up a little panel on the side, and anybody who visited that web page could add a comment. And so you go to the web page and you see all the comments along the side. I eventually turned it off because people weren't really writing anything worth reading. It was kind of funny. But I left it for a while because it was just neat to be able to make like a silly comment about a web page. So, you know, just go to a politician, write hate mail, whatever. And the funny thing is the politician would have no idea because they wouldn't know about Wikalong. So it's one of these things. I do want to talk about wikis very briefly. And actually, I'm going to go here. This is one of my favorite sites, and you've probably heard of it.
Yeah.
Wikipedia. And the URL is simply wikipedia.org. Wikipedia is also open licensed, which means you can use this content. And a lot of people do. It's actually an annoying thing if you do a search on Google, get some of the not Wikipedia versions of Wikipedia. So you always have to watch for that.
Another really good site is answers.com.
Yeah.
That's another really good site. And it's amazing the information that's there, like as this.
Sure.
There's tons of it.
The big difference, though, or maybe I'm not too. I know of answers.com. I never use it, so which is interesting. The thing about Wikipedia is all of these articles, and here we have an article on Ukraine, order of state Ukraine, or any article that you care to think of. I'm just trying to find an article. Here we go. These articles are written by the readers of the site.
Right.
And how easy is it to do this? Here's the text of the site. And Heroes of the Russian Federation. Oh, that's an image. Here we go. Hero of the Russian Federation. And I can change that. Change Japanese Federation because I'm just annoying sometimes. Yep. I'll save the page. I have now changed Wikipedia. And you might think, how could this possibly work? Now, let's reload this page. Yeah, I'll have to give it a few minutes. But we'll come back to that. But the thing is, Wikipedia allows anybody to edit the page. And on the whole, or as they would say in philosophy, in the preponderance of cases, people want to put accurate and not inaccurate information on these web pages. And so if you have a page like this where you can put something stupid like replacing Russian with Japanese, someone will come along and fix it. And how quickly? No, they still haven't done it. I did this demo in Wolfville in Nova Scotia, and I hadn't finished a sentence. I picked a really obscure page about some kind of microbiology. And as I was talking about the change that I made, somebody in the group said, oh, they fixed it. So, because this page has a history, so you can see all of this. And what's interesting is, these are all the different versions of this page since it's ever been created. And you can go to the most recent version before my edit. Here's the comparison. Alright. And I can actually revert to this page. I can't see the link right now, but I can revert to this page simply by clicking on a link that says revert to this page.
Is this Wikipedia pick up information from other sites, or is it just all
no. things? It's Wikipedia it consists entirely of these postings. And even the images. Pardon?
There's no kind of meta searching going on right now.
No. There's no meta searching at all. It's all created content. Wikipedia also has an image library, a very large image library, and the rights for all of these have been cleared, so again, you can use them under the Wikipedia license, which is an open and sharing license. How are we doing with that change here?
Didn't Wikipedia just get tested? Yeah, so there were a liability and came out as good or better than Microsoft or whatever.
Yeah,
unless you want to find out who discovered podcasting.
That's actually a very interesting thing. Yeah, you're quite right. So Wikipedia was just recently evaluated in a study done by the science magazine Nature.
Yeah.
And it did have slightly more errors than Encyclopedia Britannica, but not many more. And they're almost all in a single article. And the authors of that article concluded that, in comparison, Wikipedia is basically as accurate as Encyclopedia Britannica.
It was actually on CBC. They actually
ran
that on CBC.
Oh, I'm not surprised. It was huge news. The podcasting story is very interesting. There's an article on Wikipedia on podcasting. And, as you just mentioned, the controversy because Adam Curry, who's widely regarded by people as the founder of podcasting, went in, edited the podcasting entry, and deleted some names. And I have a personal attachment to that particular story because my name is one of the names he deleted from that article. So, go figure. So I now have a place in Wikipedia history as a footnote.
How did you see where you created the site and you changed it and all this kind of stuff?
Okay, you click on history. All right. And that's how they track them down, right? Here's the IP, and then somebody checked the IP, looked up the IP, discovered it was Adam Curry who was making these changes that left only Adam Curry in the podcasting entry. So, here's all the contributions made from this IP. Isn't that interesting? That's from here. This building, maybe, or this... Isn't that interesting? So somebody in this environment, I don't know who, is contributing on an obviously regular basis to Wikipedia. Social Credit, United Farmers of Alberta, Social Credit Party. This is great stuff.
Well, it could be anybody in the whole division, but sure. Yeah. Like this.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah. Sure. Isn't that something, eh?
Yeah.
But this is good. Let's see. Are we still Japanese? Yeah. I'm really disappointed in Wikipedia. It's a feature article, too. Another thing you can do is, for Wikipedia as a whole, recent changes. These are the changes that are being made elsewhere on Wikipedia. That's why I figured Japanese would be changed like right away, because people sit here and watch this list. And you just reload it every once in a while, and some new articles come up.
You don't have to log in. Right. Nope. It just works as like data.
That's right. Although, one of the changes that Wikipedia has made, part because of the Adam Curry podcasting thing, is in order to create a new article, you now have to be logged in with a username. But to edit an existing article, you're still allowed to be anonymous. Which is a good thing for me, because I just replaced the word Russian with Japanese.
Of course, they know it happened from here.
They know what happened from here. Yeah, they know where it happened. I've done this, I do this every once in a while to Wikipedia. I think they'll take the trade-off, because I'm telling people about Wikipedia. There we go, it's fixed.
Wow.
Can we see it?
We can indeed. There's who fixed it. Right there. And so it took exactly 7 minutes for this one word edit to be replaced and the right name put back in. And it's interesting. It's only their second correction of the day. This isn't somebody who's sitting there every 5 minutes making a change. It's the second correction of the day for that person. And that the vast bulk contributions to Wikipedia are like that. There's a core of maybe 10,000 pretty regular authors, and then hundreds of thousands of occasional authors, and I'm one as well. Every once in a while, I'll contribute something. I put the Klondike back in the Yukon, for example. The article had it in Alaska. Oh, well, what do you do? Now, how are we doing on time?
Lunch is going to come about 11:45.
Okay, what time is it now?
10:50.
10:50. Okay, why don't we take 5 minutes so I can stock up on, then I'll come back. I want to wrap up this morning. I know, because things become even more informal this afternoon. But I do want to wrap up with the RSS and the aggregating, because if you think this stuff is interesting and cool so far, the aggregation stuff is like an order of magnitude more cool, in my view. So I'll put the recording on pause for those of you who are actually still listening to this. Good of you to stay with us, and we'll get back together in 10 minutes. Okay, we're apparently recording again. I just want to check and be sure that we're recording. Alright, let's stop. Alright, and we're recording again. For real this time. Yeah, I'm using, and I actually had it installed, but it didn't occur to me to make sure everyone had sound cards and microphones. I'm just not that swift sometimes. I'm recording my talk here using a piece of software called Audacity. Audacity is free open source software. Beautiful little program. I personally found the secret to using Audacity is use a good microphone. Now, I'm not going to plug the brand because I have issues with them and inserting viruses into your computer. But I love the microphone, and I bought it before they did the bad stuff. And basically, what Audacity will do, if you get a plugin for it called Lane, it'll allow me to save my audio recording in MP3 format. And now it's just a big digital file. And for a session like this, it's going to come in at about 21 megabytes, give or take, I don't know, 2 or 3 megabytes. It depends on the encoding. And then I'll just upload it to my web server and create a link to it, and it'll be available. In fact, it'll be available later this afternoon, because I'll just upload it, well, not from here, obviously, but when I get back to my hotel room, I'll have Ethernet access, and it'll take me just a few minutes to upload it. It might take 15 minutes to upload. It's a big file. And then people who go to my website, they'll just simply click on the link and they'll be able to listen to this session. And I don't know if they'll listen all the way to this point in this session, but you know, cause the stuff that I upload tends to be shorter and it tends to be more focused. You know, when you're uploading audio, you're not really getting to see the websites and all of that. And that's a variation of what's called podcasting. And podcasting basically is uploading MP3 files to the sites and making them available to people. And then there's some stuff behind that, which I'll get into if we have time. Is that still on pause, or is it just annoying me? So if that camera was on pause, then this was an audio exclusive. It's funny, you know, when you do stuff, you do sessions, or you do talks, or you teach classes, or whatever, and you're recording them, it changes you. Because there's always in the back of your mind the understanding that, you know, 20 years from now, somebody could be listening to this. Or even worse, 2 days from now, somebody could be listening to this. And it's not a change in the sense of self-censorship or self-editing or anything like that. It's a change of awareness that your audience is different. It's not just the people in the room anymore. I think that's the sort of change that you get when you do blogging and WordPressing and Drupaling and Flickering and all of that sort of stuff. Now, here's what I want you all to do. Go to UConnMania.blogspot.com, possibly one of the worst blogs in history. And on the top link, click on comments. You should all still be logged in. I want you to post the comment. And what I want you to post simply, and nothing more than this, the URL of the blog that you created. So I would type UConnMania.blogspot.com. Log in and publish. Oh, maybe I'm not logged in. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, we're getting them in already. Great. Now we'll come back here. They'll all start coming in here. It's going to take a few minutes. I still only have one comment. Scroll up. Up. All the way up. Click here. Go comment. And post the comment. Click on where it says one comment, or however many it says when you get there, and then click on post the comment. How are we doing here? Still only one.
When I combine the commands like this, I don't even have that much.
Okay. Did you click there? And click where it says one comment, and now click post comment.
Versus one comment.
Yeah. I know, it's really awkward. I no longer should make that post comment. Right. And then type in that URL where it says leave your comment. UConnMania.blogspot.com. Oh, no, just type it in the address bar. The other way might have worked too, I
thought.
Okay. Sorry about that. I should have been clearer. There we go, we're at 3, we're getting there. Now you know how to comment on people's blogs, but that isn't the point of this part of the exercise. And we'll come back to that in a sec. Alright. I just want to get rid of that. Okay. Once you have posted your comment, and not until, please. Now, how do I want to do this? Okay. We're going to go to a site called Blog Lines. www.bloglines.com. Blog Lines is spelled the way it's pronounced. Now what Blog Lines is an aggregator. Or more specifically, an RSS aggregator, although that name is slightly misaccurate. And what you can do is create your own account. You do need to create your account on this to use this. So you just click on register. And it's pretty simple. You put in your email address and your password. I really hate these logins, but what are you going to do? Time zone and language is optional, although I do recommend English because the site would be a lot harder to use if it's in Urdu or Spanish. I guess if you speak Spanish, it'd be okay. And then, actually, let's just... I don't think I have an account with this email address. I never use my official email address because I don't hate it, but it's about 14 characters too long. And I am not going to check subscribe to Blog Lines newsletter. Oh, I'm already registered. Oh, okay, no. Okay. Soon you will receive confirmation email. And I'm not going to be able to answer that. That doesn't matter. You guys should, you have that as your email here, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, go to your email, answer the email. Basically, just hit reply and send. And these things are all automatic. It will also have a URL in the email. And you can also confirm your logon just simply by clicking that URL. And I'm going to log out. I'm going to log in under my existing account. See, I like this email address much better. So much easier to use, and people can remember it.
So you can share this to your blog?
Hang on. This is my account of Blog Lines. It looks a bit fuller than your account, but then again, I've been using it longer. Right now it'll be easy, won't it? It should be. Yeah, exactly. That's perfect.
Okay.
That's where you want to be.
And you're exploring.
And they're probably still telemanning on the other side. Is Telnet blocked? It's probably blocked, isn't it?
No.
No?
We block the, like, external, you know. We don't block external. We block externally, but we don't block externally.
Okay. Yeah, I was just thinking, if you have Telnet, you can get to any of these things that are blocked. You just Telnet in, fire up links, use a reflector, and you're in. It's nothing. Anyhow. Okay, now, here's what I'm going to do. What Blog Lines does is it aggregates a type of file called RSS from blogs or other sites that use RSS. Now, everything we have seen today so far, absolutely everything, from the wikis to the blogs, Drupal, Flickr, the whole works, all produce RSS files, and they do it automatically, behind the scenes. Usually you can recognize an RSS file by the little orange button, and you've probably seen those all over the place. This is my site in RSS. Now, it looks kind of like a web page because I've styled the RSS. So I'm going to show you the actual source. This is what the computer reads. And you can see here all the formatting has been removed. It looks very similar to that Creative Commons markup that we saw, doesn't it? With the angle brackets and all of that. This is XML.
C data is part of XML, like you down.
Sorry?
Like down about halfway, it says C data and kind of the taking kind of the right.
Yep.
So that's ML
code as well, it's not HTML. Yeah, what C data is a special type of XML markup that tells the processor to ignore everything between the start of the C data and the end. And I use that in order to embed HTML in my XML file. And if you looked at the stuff that I've written on this line here, we'll go down a bit. Yeah, you see, I've embedded some HTML right in it, and the C data tells the processor, ignore that. What the processor is interested in is this structured data. See how it begins, item, and then there's a bunch of stuff, and it ends, item. That's a single content item on my website. RSS was originally designed for newspaper sites. And an RSS file like this, there'd be a channel, which is the newspaper as a whole, and then a series of articles, whatever the articles were for that day. And the idea here is that as you publish new articles, your RSS file changes. And it's always updating according to whatever you've published today. So it's sort of like a representation of today's newspaper. So, and if you think about it, we sort of have the typical things that you would find in a description of a newspaper article. You have the title of the article. We have the location of the article. And we have a description into which I've embedded some HTML. There are some other tags that you can add to RSS, but you see I don't really use them here. They're really not necessary. Title, link, and description is enough to get you off the ground. If you wonder how to make an RSS file yourself, here's an article that I wrote, and you might want to blog the link for this. How to create an RSS feed with Notepad, a web server, and a beer. And follow these instructions, it will step you through the process. There are also websites out there that create RSS files automatically. And again, as I've mentioned, Blogger, LiveJournal, Flickr, all these things create RSS files. I'm going to go to Yukon Mania again. And you remember that the URL for Yukon Mania is just yukonmania.blogspot.com. Every Blogger account creates an RSS feed for your blog, and all you have to do is type Adam .xml after your blog address and you'll see your feed. And here's Yukon Mania's. And if we look at the source, this is a slightly different version. It's not RSS, it's a version called Atom. It's a recent adaptation of RSS, but it does exactly the same thing. Instead of channel, they say feed. And then you have the link, and you have, oh, I can't read it, the title and the content. There's basically the same things happening in Atom as in RSS. And there's a whole history of that involving much, much discussion. So, you've not only created a blog, you've created your own RSS feed. Now, why is that significant, you ask? Let's go back to blog lines. Actually, first I'm going to go here. I still only have 3 comments? I'm so disappointed. Is it 12?
Yeah.
Oh, me. There we go. That's much better. Okay. So, what I'm going to do is take this, just this first link, and copy it. Yes, there are easier ways to do this, but for this group, for this time, this was the easiest. I'm going to pop back into blog lines, and I'm going to click Add. And I'm going to put the URL in here, and then atom.xml to get the feed specifically, and I'm going to subscribe to it. And I can preview this feed if I want. There it is. Oh, good content. Alright, I can categorize it, and actually I do want to categorize it. And this is the folder, display preferences, but basically I'm just going to subscribe to it. I'll just plain subscribe to it. And there it is. With 2 posts, 2 new posts, and now I'm reading it. You can do this too. So we'll go back to Econ Mania. We'll pick up the next one. And I'll add it. Sort of see the process now, right? Subscribe. Don't have to preview it. I'll just simply subscribe to it. And there it is. Now, if I did this another 10 times, now I've got a web page, blog lines, that reads all of your feeds for this group. And like I say, I could put a category or whatever. Imagine this is one of your classes, and your students have blogs, and you're the teacher. All you do, once you've subscribed to the feeds, start up blog lines. If there's new content, it'll show up in bold. And then you just flip through your students' blogs. See, now, I've already read these, so I'm not seeing the links anymore, although I can display old links, so there they are. So, it's a way for me to be instantly aware of any content that any of you have put in your blog. That is RSS harvesting. That's the starting point for that document that I handed out. Well, what do you think about that?
Seems to make pretty efficient use of your class. Now, often in class, they have to use, say, the internet for research.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they set up the blog lines, then the research is happening automatically when they're not there. When they come in for the next class, then they can actually start analyzing the information.
Exactly.
Relevant research.
It is. And what is, your students, of course, will have their blog lines account. You, as a teacher, are accessing your free resources from wherever across the internet, tossing them into your blog. You can do it any time, you know, at home, or if you want blogger at school. They can access it any time. And now they have this content in front of them, and they have an authoring tool that they can play around with this content. Bloglines does allow you to create a blog, And so here's the blog that I've created within BlogLines itself. I hardly ever use it because I have my other blog. But so you don't even need to leave BlogLines in order to create a blog. You can also save things under clippings. So if you want to remember something that you saw, you just put it in there. This was something that was useful to me. It was a WYSIWYG editor. I use BlogLines for research. This is my primary research tool. Go figure.
What are you subscribing to under, like, under News General? Or what are you actually subscribing to at that point?
Well, I'll show you.
Great.
I got nothing to hide.
Well, no, because
actually, the stuff I have to hide is in another account.
Maybe we can figure out some other ways to use this for research. Yep. Writing web pages or doing whatever else, or
sure.
Front page, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, let me show you. Actually, I'm going to go from the bottom because the stuff at the top is really cool. Okay. These are some design sites that I like. A List Apart started off as a mailing list and turned into a website. Column 2, very good design site. Daring Fireball, very good. Zeldman, he's okay. I shouldn't say that. Mailing lists, I've written some scripts that access the output from an email list, and what it does is it takes a listserv archives, converts that into RSS, and then I subscribe to that RSS from BlogLines.
Can you click on one of them so we can see what it looks like when you actually click?
You sure? I'll click on something that has stuff in it. This is a mailing list from a website based around Moodle. Moodle is an open source learning management system. It's an alternative to Blackboard or WebCT. It currently has about 10% of the learning management system market. Open source, free, it's written in PHP. I installed Moodle on my own website. Installation time, you guessed it, 10 minutes. It's very simple to use. And the big difference between Moodle and the commercial sites, in addition to price, is that there's a large community that has grown up around Moodle. And this is the mailing list, one of the mailing lists for that community. And so, just stuff about Moodle. I could spend another day talking about Moodle all by itself. It's every bit as functional as the commercial LMSs, but much cheaper.
So you can't just make a feed from anywhere then. They don't have an RSS feed that comes from, you can't link it and have the new content show up.
That's right. If they don't produce an RSS feed, then you can't harvest it. You can't subscribe to it. Me, because I write my own programs, so I can take content, convert it into a feed, and then subscribe to it. Here, this one I didn't have to. Moodle outputs its own RSS feeds.
So it does a search on the internet then to say available RSS feeds or something like that?
Yeah. Basically, yeah. Although it tends to be more personal than that. And here's what I did. And it's the oddest thing, but you'll see that it works. I started up BlogLines, and the first thing that I did is subscribe to my own feed. And the reason why I did that is, yeah, I know.
I want to hear what I think.
Recursion is a lovely word. I said recursion is a... because BlogLines, I don't know if it still does this, but it did it at the time. I think it still does this. Well, look at what I'm subscribed to. Any suggestions? So, what better seed to give it to make me suggestions than my own content? And it started making suggestions to me. Now, it didn't make a whole lot of suggestions, but what happens now is if you go, you start reading these feeds, you know, all I need is one or two to get me off the ground. I'll go into Edubloggers, for example, 2 cents worth. This is a website by a guy called Dave Warlick. It's pretty popular, 300 subscribers. And I'll pop into one of his posts, and maybe I didn't pick a good one, sure. And on the side, he has a thing called a blog roll. This is very common. This is a gold mine. Because now, you can start clicking on his blog roll and finding the things that Dave Warlick likes. And so, you see how you can just follow the links. Blog roll itself used to be a standalone website. They create a little bit of JavaScript that you could put onto your web page, and it would automatically allow you to create that list dynamically. Now blogging software has their own versions of different things. One of the things that I do, this is pretty neat, I'll come back to blog lines. I can export this list, and with a little bit of JavaScript, have it show up on my website. Now, this is a bit of a gloss. This isn't exactly the blog lines list, and I do stuff to it. But you don't have to. But you can get your blog lines subscriptions listed on your web page by using a single JavaScript command. You have to search through blog lines to find that. It's a bit hidden. I don't want to sort of get off track like that right now, but you can do that. And then what you're doing is you're telling people, here are the sites that I like to read. So if somebody finds something that you've written, they can find more things, more sites about the same sort of thing by following your blog roll. And that's how most connections between blogs get made. Very little from searching. Usually it's person to person. And it creates a very different sort of network. So here's the category, edubloggers. These are people who, like me, write blogs specifically on education. And educational technology and the use of blogging in education. As you can see, it's a long list. So, and I got people like James Farmer in there, who I showed you his site earlier, and Darcy Norman from Calgary, and Brian Lamb from Vancouver, and people from Australia, Europe, the United States, all over. And they're all on this stuff. Some really good content.
So you can search specific people that you want. Like I'm doing, like, well, you're talking, I've added a golf one and an education one.
Yeah.
Beside the search all blogs.
Sure.
Subscribe in the list below.
Sure, let's do fast cars.
Is that how you do that kind of stuff?
You can also do that. I don't, but you can. Here's a blog called Fast Car. And I can view it. And I can't. Oh, Carnival. Okay, that's another...
I just went back and then hit the subscribe button from the other page.
Yeah, you can do that. And you just hit the subscribe button, and it'll do it for you.
There's a little shortcut you can drop in there, that easy subscribe bookmark thing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, you can, there's a, well, what you just said. Trying to rephrase it. It doesn't come out more efficiently than that. There's a shortcut you can put on your web page, easy subscribe.
And then it just subscribes to your thing automatically.
Yeah, if you have a blog lines account, when you click on that, it'll subscribe you. And there's also one for Yahoo, because Yahoo also has an aggregator, and you can subscribe using your Yahoo aggregator. There's a whole bunch of sites like blog lines. I'm just picking the one that I use here, but there's a whole bunch of RSS aggregators, or RSS readers, as they're sometimes called. Here's a list. An old list. This is actually from a few years ago. This is Dave's old list. Let's find a good list. I'm just kidding. Sorry, Dave. RSS readers. Yeah, this is in your list. Lots of choice. You can either use a website like this, or you can get specific applications that you can download and run on your desktop. Sorry, I interrupted?
No.
No? Okay. I guess there was a 5-second window there, and I missed it. So... I also have a category for cyber culture, because I'm interested more than just e-learning and edu blogs. You catch a lot of the trends and things like that from a lot of these sites. This Decaf Bad site is a very good site. The guy's a really sharp programmer, and he's right on the pulse of what's happening. It's a Creative Commons blog, naturally. And some others. Corrosion is an interesting, though sometimes it's a group blog. Mark's Voice, that's Mark Cantor, one of the people that founded Macromedia. Michael Geist, maybe it's Geist, that can't be. Is a columnist who writes, I think it's in the Toronto Star, on copyright issues. Very good. I like him a lot. And so on. You can spend like days exploring all of these. And of course, feeds that I produce, because I still subscribe to myself. Now, one of the things that I do here's a site called Technorati. Technorati is a harvesting site, and as we can see right now, it harvests 25.5 million blogs, which means it's 0.1 million blogs more than yesterday when I last looked at it. And so it harvests everything. And what I do is I type in my own website address. That's fat. And you might think, boy, is he ever vain? But again, you ask how I find blogs. It turns out that the people I'm most likely to be interested in reading are people who write about me. Well, not all the time, but once in a while. If they refer to something I've written, then they're probably writing about stuff that interests me. So I go to Technorati, I do a search for myself. Here's a link. Not found. That doesn't usually happen. No, it's not on. Two in a row? That's Smelly Knowledge. That's a good site. You wouldn't think. Right? So, and I'm finding stuff like that. These aggregator sites are very interesting. And Technorati, among others, will produce also not just focused searches, but they'll produce lists of the top blog posts.
Go ahead. I stepped into that with some of the tests this week.
No, probably would.
I don't know. You said it was especially
yeah.
And that was one of the things we were. Yeah.
Yeah, I see no reason why any of this would not work with text to speech. I'm not sure it would. I'm positive it would. I'm a blogger. I must have misspelled it. I like this site, if it's going to come up. Blog, I put net. Duh. Working blind here, folks. BlogDex is another harvester, and what it does is it harvests from everywhere and then ranks items in order, most popular to least popular. Well, nobody looks at the least popular. And what it does is it counts the number of blogs that link to a particular item, and that's how it derives its ranking. Now, you see what I've done by having all of you guys link to my article. Now, it's not going to show up yet, but I'll be checking later today to see if it pops up. It should be good for something. I don't know if it'll pop it into the top 10. I don't think that'll be enough. So, this is how you sort of keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening in the blogosphere generally. So BlogDex is one of these sites. PopDex is another one. I just can't type though, can I? Oh, it's because it's PopDex.com. And here it comes. And it's funny because they all rank them differently. Feedster.com is another pretty popular one. And Feedster also ranks blogs in addition to blog posts. And these sites all offer searches. So here's the list of the top 100 blogs in the world according to Feedster. And I'm going to show off here. There's me. So, I'm pretty pleased by that, but I figure Feedster has a mistake in its rankings. Boing Boing is a genuinely popular website, but I find it light. But again, using these lists is another way of finding blogs about things that you're interested in. And what you will find is that the problem isn't finding enough content. The problem is finding too much content. Yeah. Well, you saw my blog lines there. I guess I don't have it up anymore. It becomes nightmarish if you get too far behind. I just want to show you a couple of simple things that I've been doing, and then we'll break for lunch. And this will just take a couple of minutes. This is a script that I wrote, and what this does is it takes the output from a set of feeds that you list and brings them all together, creates a single feed out of them with a parsing error. Yes, I really hate that. Oh well. Maybe I can't show you the example. Oh, isn't that annoying? Oh, here we go. So, yeah, good. So what this has done is it's brought together the RSS feed from my website, the RSS feed from my Flickr account, and the RSS feed from a social bookmarking site, and brought them all together. And now I have a custom feed that brings all of my content together into one place, which I can then turn into a feed and give to other people. So I don't have to restrict myself to a single service. And what I did with that the next day this is called Writer, WRITR, in classic silly web service naming tradition. It's obviously under construction. Here are various feeds. One of these is the MyGlue feed that I just showed you. Now it's popping up into this side window. EduRSS is an aggregator that I built, and it pops up. And I can have my web posts. I don't know if that'll show up. Oh, I know what that'll do. Never mind. That's showing my web page instead of my RSS, which is pretty silly. I'm also going to add to this drop-down a modified version of Wikipedia, access to Google, and various other things. And the thing is, it shows up here, and I can take this, I can take images, links, whatever, and I'll just drag it into the editor. And if I had a picture here, in fact, I think I do, don't I? Oh, it might not be there anymore. I can drag a picture and drop it in, and now I can start editing. So, here is my... And edit, do whatever, right? Italics, and so on. Stop that. Ooh, it's not going to let me do that. Oh, because of that silly thingy. I'm trying to fool the web page here. My I'm trying to put my blogging stuff in there, but I can't stretch the page enough. This is, as I said, it's under construction. Here we go. This will do it. Oh, it's not going to let me expand the window beyond the size of the screen. Oh, well, you'll have to pretend. When I type in my blog name, username, and password and hit submit, what I've just typed there... shows up here. And, in fact, this is one I uploaded from that editor on Sunday. So basically what that application does is it comes aggregating, reading, writing, and posting all into a single space. And that's where this technology is headed. This doesn't exist yet except on that page. But there will be good programmers who put together stuff like this. And so you'll have what is sometimes called a personal learning environment, where something like that editor that you've just seen is basically the place that a student or a researcher or anyone surfs the web from, gets their content from, reads their content, writes their content, and it's all in the one place. And the idea is that it taps into all of these services that are out there around the web. So that's basically what I have to cover for this morning, not because I've run out of stuff to cover, but because I've run out of morning. I've really just glossed the surface of this. There's a bunch of other things I haven't talked about, Delicious and Writely and Super Glue and more. And you take what you've seen so far, that's the base of this, and then there's this proliferation of things that are being developed on that base. And it is, quite frankly, changing the face of the web. It's changing it from something where we go read to something we go create. And your students are doing this, even if they're not doing it in school. So why don't we break for lunch, and then after lunch, the agenda isn't mine anymore. I guess it's yours. Or someone's.
It's probably whatever you, if you want to show some more things and have the people, like, show them, have them play, then come back and show, have them play with some more stuff.
Sure.
Maybe some suggestions from the other sites if they have something they'd like to look at or hear your opinions on.
Absolutely. I'm in your hands and at your disposal for the afternoon and for tomorrow. So however you want to go with that is fine with me. Remote sites?
Stephen, I did have one question.
Yep.
Most of the utilities you've been showing to us are freeware utilities. Are based on open source like MySQL, and I'm generally assuming that you want to have a Linux desktop to host the services. But are there utilities or sort of daemons that you can set up your own blog servers for Windows-based systems? In our environment, we are primarily Windows-based.
Sure. And a lot of this stuff will run on Windows. I do all my coding, for example, in a language called Perl. Perl runs just as well on a Windows machine as it does on a Linux machine. Same with PHP. You can get Windows versions of the MySQL database. Almost all of the open source software, in addition to running on Linux, will run on Windows. The Apache web server, free and open source, runs on Windows. I might have one on my laptop. So generally that's not so much an issue.
So if everybody's okay with it, we'll come back in about an hour, about 1 o'clock, and then we'll just leave this feed on, and we'll mute ourselves here, and we'll see you back in about an hour.
Have a good lunch. And for those of you listening still online, have a good lunch. You deserve it.